Hi, Mark Weisbrot. Welcome to KABU.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Weisbrot is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He is also president of Just Foreign Policy. He co-wrote Oliver Stone's documentary, South of the Border. He writes and agitates. His work is on over-left media. You see a lot of it. But even more, in fact, in establishment media, he's one of the few radical economists that actually has broken into the popular press. His latest book is What the Experts Got Wrong About the Global Economy. Mark, several years ago you wrote, a quote, Venezuela's struggle is widely misrepresented in Western media. This is a classic conflict between right and left, rich and poor. Today, a couple of years after you wrote that, the conflict has now greatly intensified. U.S. is now moving from mostly sort of covert operations to full-scale subversion, attempting to weaken the elected government, an election that all foreign observers called free and fair. Tell us what's happening and give us the background.
Well, the U.S. has been trying to overthrow the Venezuelan government for the last 17 years at least, but the Trump administration has been more open and more aggressive about it, and so they are openly calling for a military coup, and now they've recognized someone that they've chosen as interim president, and that's Juan Guaido, and he's with the most extreme kind of hardline party in Venezuela, the one that doesn't want to negotiate at all for any kind of political solution. They're called Voluntad Popular, and that recognition has a lot of very destructive effects. A lot of people don't realize that. They just think, oh, well, they're saying this guy is president, and that's all there is to it. But really, one of the things that does is it imposes a trade embargo on Venezuela, because if the government, the real government, sells their oil, which accounts for almost all of the dollars that come into the country that are used to pay for imports, if they try to sell their oil to about three-quarters of their customers who are part of this coalition of the willing that is recognized and that has gone along with the U.S. to recognize this government, if they try to sell that oil, the money would go to the shadow government that the United States is recognizing. And at the same time, the recognition steals the assets of the government as well. So in other words, these assets now, according to the U.S. and U.S. government and the countries going along with Trump, those assets also now belong to the shadow government. Now, the shadow government may not be able to get at these assets or do anything with them, but it does deprive the government of them. So, for example, the U.S. has managed to block $1.2 billion in gold that is held by the Bank of England, because England is collaborating in this illegal regime change operation.
Tell us the story of CITGO.
Well, the sanctions of August 2017 had already made it impossible for CITGO to distribute its dividends and profits to Venezuela.
Yeah, lots of gas stations on the East Coast, right, are CITGO stations. It's basically owned by the Venezuelan government. That interest income was a major part of their total income that the U.S. has cut off.
This is the thing I think it's important for people to understand, because the dominant narrative, which a lot of the media repeats, although, you know, most of what I'm saying now can be found, you know, buried in long articles in mainstream media, but it's the theme that 90% of the population, or 99%, gets, is that these sanctions are designed to deprive the government of revenue and that they're going to hurt the government. In reality, what they're doing is they're hurting the people, and actually causing many people to die because they can't get medicine, life-saving medicines. That's generally the effect of sanctions. They hit the population. But in Venezuela, it's even more extreme because, first of all, Venezuela is in an unusual position at being an oil exporter that depends on oil, which is owned by the government for all of their dollars. it means that they're really cutting off foreign exchange to the country. And they've been strangling the economy for this purpose, especially since August of 2017 when they imposed the financial embargo on the country. So all this time, what the U.S. government has been doing is trying to make people suffer enough so that they or the military will find a way to overthrow the government. That is the deliberate strategy. There's no other way to interpret the actual events.
And yet it hasn't been successful. They've been doing that for actually quite a long time, encouraging the right wing and the business class and the elites of Venezuela to stop investing, to take their money elsewhere, to go into the black market instead of selling to the people, to do smuggling, all of the things that the U.S. is encouraging, and encouraging Colombia and some of the other U.S. allies in South America to destroy the economy. But what's so interesting is that it hasn't worked. The military has stayed loyal. There was a military coup, but most of the military turned against the coup people and supported the government and put down the coup, along with the population of Venezuela that poured into the streets and supported the government. In Chile, they got the army, Pinochet, they supported him. He took over, killed a huge number of leftists, and created a capitalist paradise. In Honduras, they also got away with it and got the military to do a coup, and now completely failed state that the U.S. caused. But that hasn't worked in Venezuela. Why is that?
Well, it's worked in the sense of preventing the economy from recovering. It's the worst depression in Latin American history. They lost about 50% of their economy, which has never happened, at least in recorded history. And they've got hyperinflation of 1.6 million% annually right now, and it's increasing, of course. And so they have definitely made people suffer a lot. Now, they haven't gotten the military coup. They thought they were going to have it a couple of weeks ago. You know, right now they have what I call this coalition of the willing, because I think it's good to draw an analogy to the Iraq war and the buildup to the Iraq war, where they got their allied countries to go along with the sanctions and then the planned invasion and the invasion itself. And this is what they have now. They don't have support for an invasion, even the Latin American, the Lima group, which is a group of allies, almost all allies, and right-wing governments in Latin America, does not support the military invasion, and the Europeans wouldn't support the military invasion. It's not clear that the State Department or the Pentagon is in favor of a military invasion. But the Trump administration is trying to convince Venezuela that that is definitely a possibility. But what they're doing with this coalition of the willing is they're trying to present to the world this idea that the government is illegitimate, and the parallel government they recognize is the legitimate government, and that therefore what they're doing is somehow justified. I mean, they can't really say it's legal, but they pretend it is. Problem for them is that if the military doesn't actually do what they want and overthrow the government, then some of these people in the coalition for the willing will peel off. For example, the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, he's a key player in getting the European support, because Germany and some other countries tend to follow Spain's lead on Latin America. And he was against the sanctions vocally. And then he flipped under a lot of pressure. It was reported in the Spanish media that the U.S. put a lot of pressure on him to support this regime change operation. And so he's not going to do that forever while people are starving and dying from the sanctions. He's getting pressure from the left in Spain not to do that. And the Europeans will have trouble maintaining this. And so that's why you see in the Trump administration more and more aggressive actions and rhetoric and anything they can do. You know, time is not on their side.
This is Bill Resnick for KBOO Radio, talking to Mark Weisbrot, who's a co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, president of Just Foreign Policy. He writes a lot, and he gets published, unlike most radical economists and observers and writers. He gets published in the establishment press. We're talking about Venezuela and the U.S. effort to topple the government. Why does the government, though, stay fairly popular, at least more popular than the opposition? They actually won a recent election, and many international observers called it a free and fair election. Of course, the right wing boycotted it because they're so split. Some people are peeling away. It is a problem. And the state does not have funds for, in fact, supporting poor people or their allies in the field. It seems to me, though, a lot of people in Venezuela are sticking with the government despite the enormous privations.
Yeah, it's still a polarized country. I wouldn't say it's a popular government at all. The best polling data that we have shows Maduro had something around 20% support. That's actually quite a lot considering the state of the economy, but it's not a popular government at all. In fact, if the opposition had participated in the last election, they could have united around a candidate or even come close to that, they would have won.
Right. They were so split that they couldn't organize themselves right into an electoral force.
They boycotted for various reasons, but I think they couldn't agree on a candidate. They had some legitimate complaints about the election. Some candidates and parties were excluded, which was not fair. On the other hand, though, it was also very unfair from the other side because the United States was telling the electorate that if they didn't vote this government out, that they would starve. And so, you can't really have a fair election under those circumstances. It wasn't stolen, as you see very often in the press. They say it's fraudulent, but that wasn't true. There was no evidence whatsoever that the vote count was anything but an accurate vote count. And in fact, the totals that Maduro received were consistent with the pre-election polling data. It's still true that no matter how bad the economy is, you still have millions of people who support the government as opposed to the opposition. And that's partly because, first of all, you had a decade that was one of the best and possibly the best in Venezuela's history before this crash. And so many poor people had opportunities they never had before. You had, from 2003 to Chavez's death in 2013, you had the best growth in any social indicator you look at. There was the most progress in reducing poverty, reducing infant mortality, anything you want to look at, access to education, pensions, health care. It was a successful experiment for those years. And I started with 2003 for looking at Chavez's period in office, because before that he didn't have control over the oil industry and couldn't do anything. So that was the point when the government actually became the government of Venezuela, when they got control over the national oil industry. So, they had the huge advances. But I think the other reason why it remains polarized is because the Chavistas, in particular, have reason to fear what would happen if the opposition was able to seize power. The risks of a Chilean-style dictatorship are very real. And so that is why you really need a negotiated solution. And all of the sane observers recognize that. So the Pope has offered to mediate. He realizes this. The governments of Mexico and Uruguay have also offered to mediate because they understand this. In 1990, when Nicaragua, the Sandinistas and the opposition there agreed to settle their differences through an election, which is also not a fair election because George H.W. Bush was telling the people of Nicaragua that they had to vote out the Sandinistas or they would continue to have the war and embargo. But nonetheless, they agreed on an election, and there were conditions to make sure that the losing party would be safe. And so in this case, the Sandinistas kept control over the military for the next 5 years after they lost the election, and then peace was maintained. And so you would need some kind of compromise. And that's where, if you really want to understand what the U.S. is doing there, because they could just wait for this government to fall from the effect of the economy, and including the sanctions. But they don't do that because they don't want any kind of compromise to come out of this. They want their people in control. And Bolton has openly said, bragged about how well the oil companies, U.S. oil companies, are going to do under the new government. And this is their impact. And this is the destructive impact because of their goals, which are not the same as the goals of even the broad opposition in Venezuela. They've got the most hardline party in control, and that's the party they want to get in. And they don't care how much violence, or even if it, how much violence it leads to, or even if it leads to a civil war. That's what they want. And that's what Rubio and Bolton and Trump and Elliot Abrams, a war criminal from the 1980s, who is now the special envoy for this operation, that's what they want. And that's what they're fighting for. And this is the part that I think you don't really get in the media. The media makes it look like they're trying to help restore democracy to Venezuela. And they've also created this kind of clash of civilizations narrative because they've got their coalition of the willing. And their coalition of the willing includes a number of European governments and Latin American governments that are to varying degrees democracies. And then on the other side, you have the rest of the world. Well, that includes China and Russia and Turkey. And so they say, well, this is the democratic governments versus the authoritarian governments. And it's nothing of the sort. It's really just a power grab by the United States and, of course, the most hardline element of the opposition that is allied with the Trump administration.
So Mark Weisbrot, who's the president of an organization, Just Foreign Policy, and writes a lot, including in the establishment press, he gets published. Mark, you've described a situation where, in fact, it is possible that a negotiated solution could be forced if some of the European states, as well as maybe the Congress of the United States and the U.S. people, began objecting much more to this effort by the Trump administration to install a really vicious right-wing government in Venezuela that very few Venezuelans want. It's possible then to force the U.S. to accept the mediation by Mexico or the Pope or whatever the party would be. What are the possibilities of that?
There's a letter circulating in the Congress right now, and it's going to be released in the next week or so, I would guess. And a number of members of Congress have signed on to it. It's a letter that calls for the United States to support a negotiated solution. I think it's important because the Democratic leadership, Pelosi, for example, and Elliot Engel, the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Engel just recently, you know, recognized the Guaido parallel government. Most Democratic members of Congress would not do that. And in fact, I think most of them would prefer a negotiated solution. Many of them just don't know. You know, they can't follow all these issues in detail, and they literally don't know what's going on. That's the most important area where there's real pushback. It's going to come from the Congress, just like that bill that passed this week on the war in Yemen, where the House voted for. It'll be the first time when the Senate votes. You'll have the whole Congress voting to use the 1973 War Powers Act to order the president to get out of the war in Yemen, which is, you know, a genocidal war that's putting 14 million people at risk of starvation right now. And that was done through a lot of hard work convincing members of Congress to do that. And I think this something similar can be done for Venezuela. There's actually a bill introduced now in the House that would prohibit any kind of military involvement. And that's also important. So the push for a negotiated solution is the most important thing. And I think the Congress is the most important arena of struggle right now. Both of these efforts, both the war powers resolution that the House just passed, you don't see them in the media, but this is really the result of thousands and in some cases tens of thousands of people actually pressuring their members of Congress. That's how it happened.
Mark Weisbrot, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Here, I'm leaving here.